I know firsthand how exhausting it can be to manage all the tasks in my reselling business, like listing, bookkeeping, and more, but I found a solution that has given me back my time and allowed me to grow my business, hiring a virtual assistant. And now I want to share that solution with you. That's why I've created an online course called Hiring a Virtual Assistant for Your Reselling Business. With this course, you'll learn everything you need to know to find, train, and manage a virtual assistant like a pro. And because I want to make this course accessible to everyone, I'm offering a special coupon code, FLIPTHESCRIPT, that gives you $10 off at checkout. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your reselling business to the next level. Sign up now at hiringava.com and let's enjoy the freedom and fun of growing our businesses together. Again, you can sign up at hiringava.com. Welcome to the Flip the Script podcast. I'm your host, Denali, and I'm a full-time reseller on eBay and Poshmark. My store and closet name is El Ducho, E-L-D-U-C-H-O, and you can find me on Instagram and YouTube as El Ducho Thrift. I'm really excited about this week's episode. I had the opportunity to interview two friends of mine, and they are a reselling couple, and their names are Bill and Tori. You can find Bill on Instagram and Poshmark under the username 324finds, and you can find Tori on Instagram, Poshmark, and YouTube, which is actually both of their YouTube, under the username Girly Girl Style, and all of this will be in the show notes. Bill and Tori resell together as a couple. They do have separate closets, so spoiler alert there. Bill does this as a quote-unquote full-time gig, and Tori does this part-time along with her full-time job. Bill and Tori are local resellers to me, so they are dear friends of mine, and I was so honored to have them on the podcast this week. I hope you enjoy getting to know more about them and hearing more on their journey. So let's get into it. Hi, Bill and Tori. Thanks for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having us, Denali.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you guys here on the podcast. You know, I have like an endless list of resellers that I want to speak to. And of course, you know, people that I'm close with always come to mind. And that would, you know, you guys would fall into that bucket since we are also in real life friends.
IRL,
it's true. You know, it's funny. I was thinking last night, because I always like to kind of reflect and think about, you know, how do I know the person that I'm interviewing if I know them personally? And Tori, you and I met at a Posh and Sip. That was our first time meeting, right?
Yeah, it was at the Pink Door.
Yes.
Right? That was the one?
Yep, it was at the Pink Door. And I remember because we didn't know each other, and I saw you sitting at the other end of the table, which was kind of a bummer because we didn't really get to interact that much. But I kept thinking, who is this girl? She's so cute. She's dressed so cute. I really want to talk to her. But, you know, thankfully, other opportunities came up and we have gotten to know each other better. But yeah, it's just been fun getting to know you and Bill. And so I'm really excited to share your guys' story on the podcast today. So
yeah, and we're so excited. And going back to that night, that was one of those events that I was so nervous to do because Bill didn't come with me to that.
Right.
That was just me saying, hey, I started in this community and I want to go meet some like-minded people. So that was serendipitous, I think.
Absolutely. And I agree with you. The first reseller event I went to, I was super scared. it's scary the first time, but once you rip that Band-Aid off, it gets a little bit easier.
Oh yeah. Now I can't stop.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note of first things, you know, my question for you guys is how and when did you guys first start reselling?
Well, I'll let Bill take this one because his will be pretty short, and then I'll dive in.
Sounds good.
I used to drive you around Arizona thrifting, if you don't remember. Oh. MR2 with no air conditioning, and
oh,
I just
true.
Totally despised it. I was like, we can only spend like an hour. It'd be like three. It's like, are we going to go? Oh, we're going to go to the next door.
True. But that was the thrifting piece. That wasn't the reselling. I mean, I did the reselling piece, but when did you specifically start actual reselling?
Last year.
Yeah.
Almost a year to the day, I think.
And what's your age?
I will be 48 in July.
And the reason I ask that is because, I mean, there's a lot of talk about, is it too late to start new ventures and new careers? And Bill went full-time reselling just a year ago. And that's like a huge, huge thing.
And Bill, what were you doing prior to jumping into reselling?
I was a chef for 20 plus years. Got burnt out of that. I mean, burnt out. Mm-hmm. And then I did a bunch of random stuff.
Like facilities.
And, yeah, facilities for 8 years. Did some little Home Depot security for a bit. And then Tori's closet boomed so bad that she was just like swimming in trying to get things listed or trying to get things cleaned or shipped or, you know. So I went part-time with that. And then last April, I guess, was to dive into the deep end.
Yeah.
When you join the club officially. Also, just a quick note, Bill, you saying that you're, did you say 48?
Not quite.
47?
Yes.
47. Well, and I don't know how old you are, Tori, but Bill, you must be a vampire because you look like you're 33. So.
Well, the grays are creeping in, so I don't know if I could pass for 33.
All right. Okay. Sure. All right. Well, what about you, Tori? How did you first start?
Yeah, my start is kind of that origin story of a kid without money trying to figure out how to get something that I didn't have. And my earliest memory is, you know, we used to get free lunch. I was one of the kids that was lucky enough to benefit from that. Mm-hmm. And so I would sell my free lunch ticket to other students. And so then I would end up having a little cash where I could go to the bookstore or, you know, I remember buying a cookie, which is so silly, but we couldn't because the free lunch didn't include a cookie. So it was just, that was kind of the first start into it that I can even remember.
Mm-hmm. And so where did it take you from there? Because I feel like I remember you telling me that you've worked at a buy-sell trade store in your life.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, that was the start of it.
Yeah.
And so I would constantly go and buy things and resell them just throughout, you know, high school and everything. And then when I was 18, I actually got a job at a buy-sell trade store. It wasn't a big name one. This was just a local one. I became a manager at 18. I was horrible. I always like to say this. I thought I was, you know, I was a dictator. But I learned so many great things from working in that store. And then later on, I ended up being a manager at another bigger buy-sell trade store. So it just kind of has followed me throughout my life. And I am 44. So I do want to say that I'm never afraid to share my age because I think that it's something we should be proud of. So
yeah,
doing it a lot.
Yeah. Well, again, just saying that you guys are both vampires because you look about 15 years younger, both of you do. So whatever you're doing, I want to figure that out. So.
Moisturizer.
Okay. All right. Moisturizer. Okay. Good to know. Okay. So what, and Bill said that, you know, he's reselling full time now. Tori, are you a full-time reseller? Are you a part-time reseller? What's your status?
So I always, you know, I went back and forth with what does part-time and full-time mean? But I think the true definition is that how you make your income? And for me, I am part-time. I do have a full-time day job that I love so much, and it takes up a lot of my day anyway. So part-time, or so Poshmark and reselling in general is definitely my part-time, I guess I would say part-time.
Yeah.
Okay. But I do a lot of other things. So
yeah, well, you're right. The waters are a little bit muddy in terms of saying part-time and full-time because, right, a lot of people might fall into the part-time definition, but the reality is they're working full-time hours. So
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. I guess primary source of income. So how did you fall into, you know, reselling online? You know, where did that start in your journey?
So what I can remember is, you know, I was doing a lot of reselling in Seattle at different locations, at different physical locations. And it was just, I hate driving. I hate traffic. So I would find myself just stuck with a lot of clothes for a while. And then I started, you know, like maybe ThredUp I was doing before Poshmark because it was easy to send in a bag. But I just kept feeling like I was missing out on something. And then I don't even know how I discovered Poshmark. I can't remember, but I remember the first time that I tried it and it just felt like every single skill that I had learned up to this point in my life just came together. Because I was doing outfit of the day photos on Instagram. People were always reaching out to me, asking me, you know, where they could find things. And so just it all came together with Poshmark. So that was super cool.
So when you were doing your outfit of the day photos on Instagram, were you getting messages from people who weren't like your friends or family?
No, because I didn't have a big following.
Gotcha.
Back then it was just, you know, like my friends or, you know, close people or people that knew them that would just be like, oh, where did you get that? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, how did you put that outfit together? Those type of things.
So do you remember what year that you joined Poshmark?
2018, I think. Yeah, it was just April of 2018.
Okay. And when was that? Now I'm trying to think, when was that Posh and Sip that we went to?
I think it was that year. I think it was the end of 2018. Because
Yeah, like you're right.
October-ish maybe?
Yeah, it was September or October. You're right.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So you started listing your items on there. Had you had any previous experience selling on any other platforms like, I don't know, eBay or Amazon or anywhere in the internet world?
Yes. So in 94, so when I was in high school, when I graduated high school, in order for me to go to community college at the Mesa Community College, I did end up selling a lot of clothes on eBay to pay for college. So the buy to sell trade store that I was working at, it was a name brand focused location. So they taught me all about which brands to buy. And, you know, it's funny, there's some locations in Phoenix that are very popular that even back in 94 were very popular. Mm. And I would sell mostly denim because denim was an easy thing back there. There were brands that were super in demand, but I made enough to pay for a semester of college. And that was in 94. But that was, you know, eBay was totally different back then. And that was the last that I ever touched eBay. So I would say from after like 94, 95, I hadn't done anything else online.
And I'm curious, you know, selling on eBay in 94, were you taking photos and like scanning them? Because I remember at some points on eBay when I sold back then, sometimes some of the listings didn't even have photos. It was just about describing your items.
Yeah. And I don't even remember doing photos. Mm-hmm. So I feel like because we didn't have smartphones or anything.
Right.
So I feel like I must have just said, this is what it is. This is the brand. This is the size. And, you know, people would just buy them.
And at that time, you know, because it was paying for your schooling and kind of keeping your lifestyle afloat, had the thought ever occurred to you of doing that as a job?
It didn't, because I worked at a buy sell trade store. So I think in my mind, mm-hmm. Well, but also I was, you know, I grew up with the thought that you get a job that is a career that you stay with the rest of your life. You get your college degree mm-hmm. and then that becomes your whole life.
Right.
So that was kind of the mentality. I was the first person to get my college degree in my family. So, yeah, I never considered it at that time, even though I was a fashion merchandising major and I had always planned on going to fashion school. So I thought I would do something in that realm, but it was kind of one of those dreams that did not happen.
Yeah. And also thinking about your time working at the buy sell trade store, and I know it was so long ago. Well, not so long ago, but you know what I'm saying? But, you know, were there people who would come and source like your buy sell trade location? I mean, were resellers something that even occurred to you at that time?
Yeah. Well, so the first time, like when I was 18, it really wasn't. I mean, we had people that would come in, but it wasn't really when I was too young, I think, to put it together. Yeah. When I was managing the other location, you know, we had flippers, like that's what we called them. They would come in, they would bring bags and bags of stuff that they got really cheap to mm-hmm. sell to us. And that was kind of my first light bulb that these are people that are doing this for a living, which was super interesting to me. So that's when I was actually going to college in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the first time that I ever even thought that, oh, people actually do this to make money. But, you know, it wasn't like a realized thing then, because that was 2003. So.
Yeah. And you mentioned that working at the buy sell trade store helped you kind of understand brands that were popular at that time when you were working there. I'm curious, were there other kind of reseller life business lessons that you learned from working there? For instance, I don't know, quality of garments or looking for flaws or stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's great. And I hadn't even thought of that. But I was a buyer at both of them. I mean, I was a manager at both of them, so I had to know the whole business. And that was the thing. You had to make sure you selected the items that would eventually sell. So the first one was a little bit more focused on name brands. So it wasn't really about, you know, styles and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But knowing the quality at the second in 2003 was super important because, you know, there was a lot of vintage pieces, unique pieces. And so I really got to understand fabric and fabric content, which are all amazing lessons to know, even if you're not a reseller. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think that working in a buy-sell trade store in two different focused places really helped hone my skills.
Okay.
Are you tired of spending hours sharing and sending offers to likers? Introducing Posher VA, the web program that will save you time and increase your sales. With Posher VA, you can automatically share your closet, send offers to likers, and schedule your share times all with just a few clicks. Using code ELDUCHO, you can try Posher VA for 2 weeks for free, no credit card required. Posher VA is not just another program, it is your program. Say goodbye to manual sharing and hello to even more time in your business. Try Posher VA today using code ELDUCHO, ELDUCHO.
And then I've got a question for Bill. So Bill, I know from watching a lot of your guys' like live YouTube videos, you know, you say often that prior to reselling, you weren't really a shopper. And maybe you'd say you're not really a shopper still in some capacity. I'm curious, you know, has that changed at all for you? Do you feel like now in reselling, you're a little more, are you excited to go source? Like, what's your feeling on that?
I love the bins up here because it suits my taste, stuff I would wear and stuff I want to sell. So yes, I think from a year ago, I'm definitely a shopper now.
Yeah. Okay.
Definitely. But before, oh, there is no way.
and I'm wondering also, you know, transitioning from being a chef and working in, you know, a few different careers that you've had, you know, what's your thoughts on reselling? Because it's probably, I would imagine, not something you thought you'd be doing now.
Absolutely not. This wasn't even in the furthest back of my head.
Right.
I love it, but also I'm ex-military. So the scheduling thing doesn't really, I can, you know, motivate myself to get the work done. I don't have to have check boxes. Mm-hmm.
Something we always argue about. Like, we need a list. You need a list.
My memory at 47, almost 48, is really still pretty sharp. So I know what needs to be done and when it needs to be done and how it needs to be done.
Wait, so you're saying you work really well on a schedule, or you have your own schedule in your head? Sorry.
I have my own schedule. I don't have one written down or printed up or on a spreadsheet. Or. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, you know, what is that schedule for you? Like, what goes on in a day?
Beginning to end?
I mean, sure. A condensed version. What's your reselling day?
Wake up, make the coffee.
I mean, reselling day.
Take the dog out, and then I start steaming and photographing. I usually try to do batches, mm-hmm. like 5 to 10. Mm-hmm. And then the day usually morphs into something else, like taking the dog out. Mm-hmm. Definitely taking care of the apartment.
Yeah.
Run into the post office just about every day.
And I think that you don't even realize. So that's, you know, for me, since I have such ADD, I have to have lists. I have to have plans. I have to be like, today I am going to do, you know, my photo shoots. Tomorrow I am going to do this. With Bill, he can just kind of get up and say, oh, well, this is what needs to get done. Mm-hmm. So it's totally, we sometimes clash a little bit with our styles. You know, I'll say, but the good news is, if I need something done, because he also photographs my items for me, cleans my items, you know, really helps me mm-hmm. With my Poshmark closet. So if I can give him direction, it also helps so that he knows what to focus on.
Gotcha.
Yeah, especially with your stuff. Yeah. I have my stuff handled, but yeah, your stuff exactly. is all over the place sometimes.
So now, having been a reseller for a year or so now, Bill, could you go back to, you know, what people call a Absolutely. Traditional job?
No chance on this earth. There is no way. Nope.
Yeah. And I'm because guessing.
I can take the time off if I need it.
Right.
But I know that time off is going to have to be made up somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, no clock punching, No.
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. I think that's why it, you know, attracts a lot of us, is the flexibility in your life. And I'm wondering for you, Tori, I mean, have you ever had a thought of going, you know, full time or making this your sole source of income?
You know, for one brief moment, I thought about it. But because I'm so involved in so many different things, I feel like it's not, you know, Bill coming into this and taking over the full-time portion of it was so helpful to me, so I could realize that I really want to do more charity work. I want to do more YouTube work. So different things are kind of pulling my attention.
Mm-hmm.
And my day job, I'm a senior instructional designer. I like essentially build video content for customers on our products, and I get to write scripts, and I get to, you know, do all of these creative things. So I can't even imagine leaving my company right now. But if I did, I think I would want to focus a little bit more on the philanthropy piece, yep, and then using the reselling to kind of drive that.
Yep. Okay, cool. So I'm wondering, you know, you guys have mentioned Poshmark. Tori said, you know, way back in the day, she dipped her toes in eBay. Where are you guys selling currently?
Posh.
So you're Posh, Posh,
and I do have some things listed on Mercari, but not but, a lot.
Not a lot. And then, yeah, and I'm primarily Poshmark, and then I also do Etsy.
Okay. So, you know, for your clothing, I'm guessing that's all on Poshmark. Bill, what are you putting on Mercari?
All clothes.
All clothes also? Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what's going on Etsy, Tori?
So on Etsy, it's my vintage pieces, because my primary focus is vintage. I think like 95% of even my Poshmark closet is vintage.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been doing cross listing of my more expensive pieces over on Etsy, and then also my custom pieces. So I'm doing, you know, some custom embroidery pieces, and but those have a little bit more visibility over in the world that is based on, you know, handmade items and that type of thing.
Right. So we haven't mentioned it yet, but you guys have two separate closets on Poshmark. Can you tell me, you know, what was your thought process for having two closets, and what's in the two closets?
Well, you know, it kind of started because, as Bill mentioned, my closet just got so big, and we were doing really well when I first started. And at that time I was selling all the things that we're selling, the Free People, the Anthro, all of the brands that were really hot. And that's what we were finding in Seattle, name brands, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then once Bill started helping me, I realized that that wasn't really my passion. I found myself not getting excited about a lot of the things that were in my closet. So when he decided to go full time, he was like, well, you know, I want to start a closet. And so I started putting things in his closet that maybe I wasn't excited about,
mm-hmm,
so that I could focus a little bit more on vintage. So yeah, my closet at this point, as I mentioned, is like 95% vintage. And then B, what's your?
Well, a lot of Anthro and Free People from your closet, but mainly like the outdoor person.
Mm-hmm.
Columbia, North Face, all this stuff, Patagucci, the stuff I like to wear outside.
I'll never forget that, Denali. You said that one time, and now we say it all the time, and people are like, oh yeah, like Tori and Bill say it. I'm like, no.
Oh, you know, I probably got it from someone else, so I can't take credit. It always goes down the line somewhere. So, but what might surprise people is that Bill sells men's and women's clothing. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And do you have a preference on selling one or the other?
I would really love to sell just men's.
Mm-hmm.
And it's selling, but it just takes so darn long to get out of the closet that I have to supplement that with women's, because I know women's is definitely going to sell.
Mm-hmm. And what was the learning curve, you know, for learning those women's brands? Because, right, you know, men are familiar with men's brands. Women are familiar with the women's brands.
I am still currently learning.
Yeah. Same, Bill. Me too.
I can't believe some of the construction on the clothes that you guys put on your body, because I can't figure them out. There's been a couple of times that I have to actually ask Tori to get up from her day job and come show me how this dress works. It's like rocket science. Yep. I don't get it.
I feel you. So Tori, for your closet, you know, you said that it's primarily vintage in your Poshmark closet. Are you finding that because you're, you know, possibly curating a vintage closet, do you have repeat buyers?
I do. And, you know, we've always had some repeat buyers. I will say of late, we haven't had as many, but also, you know, sales have kind of slowed down just a little bit. But I feel like we do. We have a lot of people that come back. The thing with vintage, the sizing is so all over the place that even if I have those repeat buyers, it's kind of hard for them to purchase multiple items because the sizes are so specific and so unique. So that's a little bit of a challenge.
And when you're looking at vintage, you know, when you're sourcing, what attracts you? Is it certain decades? Is it certain designs, colors? What are you looking for in your closet?
So for me, you know, the style has always been the thing. So even when I first started Poshmark and I was getting the different Anthro and those type of brands, the popular brands, it was all about style. I never really focused on the brands. And that's really important with vintage as well, because a lot of people will pick up something because it is vintage, but they don't, but that's it. There's no other underlying reason. For me, I'll pick up an item. I'm usually drawn to prints because I like things that are bright, that are unique, that you're not going to find in the stores right now. Different styles, something that's structured, a lot of blazers, because I do love a good oversized blazer. And I sell a lot of, like, I love the 70s, 80s, and, you know, 90s, of course, but it's, there's really no rhyme or reason, but I like a beautiful piece that's going to be unique that can be modernized.
And you mentioned the sizing, right? And I'm familiar, obviously, with vintage pieces as well, whereas like a medium 20, 30 years ago might be a small nowadays. How, you know, what do you do to communicate that, I guess, to your customers? Do you change like the title, or excuse me, like how do you explain it in a listing, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at? Because if you list the item as medium on Poshmark and somebody's searching for it, they'll come to it as a medium, but it's actually a more like a small. Do you change the sizing in the listing?
Yeah, I do 100%, because shoppers that are looking for vintage know vintage. They know that things are going to be, you know, not labeled as they're looking for. Because Poshmark is a modern app, it's not built for vintage. So I do put measurements for my pieces. I do also try most of those pieces on, either on a mannequin, because I do most modeling for my clothing. So I can actually give kind of an overview of this is how the fit is. This is how the bust, the length, the waist is. It fits best a size like small to medium, check the measurements, and then I put it in a modern size. So then, yeah, if someone's searching for it, it'll still come up.
Gotcha. What's, if you have one in mind, what's been your best vintage flip?
I keep coming back. Someone asked me this yesterday too, in our live. I've had quite a few. I'm going to say two, because one is the expected and one's, was an unexpected one.
Okay.
But I had this Gunny Sacks dress that was a super unicorn. It was so unique. And I just had it literally wadded in like a bag. And I probably had it for like 18 years. I don't even know, because I just had it forever. And it had slight damage on it. And so I sat on it forever. And then for some reason, you know, we just moved to Spokane within the last year. I found it again. And then now that I'm, you know, reselling, I was like, oh, I wonder what this can go for. And that I ended up selling it for $250.
Nice.
For something that was just sitting for like 20 years. That's awesome. And I, you know, got a really great feedback from the person. She was like, you sold me a piece of art. And it was like, it's one of my favorite flips. And then recently I had this 90s floral romper that I found. I'm pretty sure I got it at the bins and sold full price, no bartering or anything, on Posh for $45.
Oh,
and
it awesome.
Was adorable. And it was one of those where I'm like, okay, I'm happy with this one.
What about you, Bill? Has there been a flip for you in your closet that you know, that stuck out for you?
Probably the Ibex cape. I have no idea. I think it was my third trip to the bins by myself. And I snagged it because it was on top of the bin. Somebody had just tossed it. I was like, this looks interesting. Felt it. I was like, feels great. shoved it in the bag, got home, found out that it retailed for $229, and I think I sold it for $65.
Oh, yeah, nice.
I said offered a Liker for you.
And Bill, I paid like $1.50 for it, so.
Yeah, that was a great one.
I mean, that's what you gotta love about the bins, right? You're like, I made $100 on this item I bought for $1.
Exactly. Yeah,
and I didn't know what it was either. So when I got home, I found out that it was this organic factory that makes their own merino wool. They're totally green. I was like, wow.
But that goes back to you knowing fabrics these days and really like that's understanding. True. And taking a risk at the bins is also...
not cost.
Yeah, not as scary. Well, so you mentioned, Tori, that you guys are living in Spokane now, Spokane, Washington. Obviously, we're all local to each other. But prior to that, you were living in Seattle. And I'm curious, you know, when you moved, were you guys concerned about how it would affect your reselling business?
So, you know, I've been around long enough that I know that you just have to be flexible. No matter what you're doing, you just have to make sure that you have the ability to be flexible. So I knew that by leaving Seattle, we weren't going to find the designer pieces anymore. We weren't going to find any of the higher end pieces. So we were probably going to have to change our strategy, which we did. And, you know, it worked out well because that's about the time that I ended up going mostly vintage in my closet, because here in Spokane, the vintage is amazing.
There's a lot of it.
And in Seattle, we were mostly finding more of the labels. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So did I answer the question?
Yeah, totally you did. Yeah. No. So what I think is awesome, though, is that you guys still have a Goodwill outlet in your area, right? Because not everybody has them in their area. Bill mentioned that he's sourcing from them. Are you doing your sourcing there also, Tori, or are you going to regular thrift stores?
So I still enjoy the regular thrift. I do go to the bins with Bill because our bins do get a lot of great vintage pieces as well. You don't know what you're going to get, but I also am very, a little bit more specific with what I'm looking for. So by going to the regular thrifts, I can go through, you know, the things that I want to get, the dresses, the jackets, those pieces, you know,
mm-hmm.
And our pricing here is not that bad. I mean, Goodwill is more expensive. We don't have the $1.79 days that we had in Seattle, which is sad.
Yeah, those are pretty nice. Do you guys have Savers or Value Village over there?
Yes, but I only go during sale days.
Gotcha.
But we do have one. But it's funny, the local thrifts here are actually pretty fantastic.
Oh, that's awesome. You gotta love the mom and pop ones. Those are some of the best ones. Yeah. Or the smaller, like charitable-based ones. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are pretty great too. So, you know, when you were in Seattle, you guys were living in a house, and now in Spokane, you're living in an apartment. Is that correct?
It is. Yep.
So talk to me about how the workspace has changed and what's your setup now?
Well, it's kind of funny. So, you know, we left this house. We gave up a nice yard, you know, there was that, but we moved to this apartment that is on the 11th floor and just full of windows. Mm-hmm. So there's so much natural light here and there's so much space. So even though we left the house, the house was from 1911 and it was so dark. It was so dark. I probably had like 6 different lighting kits in one tiny room to try to make something look good. Bill was just struggling constantly with
tripping the over lighting. 14 light boxes and the ring.
Exactly.
Like, this is not working.
So then when we got here, we were able, there's a whole like dining room area that we turned into a studio. So it has, you know, giant windows. We put up a faux brick wall. We have the studio lights set up. So now that's where Bill's office essentially is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's right next to the washer and dryer. So it's like things come out, they get hung, they get steamed, they get photographed on the mannequins, and none of that has to go in the rest of the house. So that's good.
Gotcha. And then where are you storing the inventory?
So the inventory is in my office. So we do have a 2-bedroom. I mean, we have quite a bit of space, surprisingly. So we have a 2-bedroom, and the 2nd bedroom is my office for work. And then we just have the shelving system and we use the bin system. So everything gets numbered and put into our bins. And it seems to work pretty well because as long as you're putting it away, it's fine and you don't trip over everything.
Right. Yeah, that's half the battle is putting it away. So between both of your closets, how many pieces of inventory do you guys have roughly?
Like 700?
let's see, I have 380 in mine.
Yeah, and I think I have 250, and so, then we have some outstanding pieces.
About 700, I guess.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. All right. Yeah, that sounds manageable-ish, right?
I mean, and we want to get a house. So the thing is, when we moved to Spokane, we had actually put an offer on a house. We got approved, and then turns out it failed the inspection miserably. It was, but I think it was meant to be. So now that we've been here, we have loved living where we are because we were close to downtown. But, since we can't leave the house, it kind of is a moot point. So we're looking at buying another house so we can have more space to expand, because we definitely want to expand, but it's just kind of.
It's a challenge. Max, I think.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I've obviously seen, your videos from YouTube of your beautiful apartment, and all those windows look so lovely. All that natural light is kind of amazing, and your views of the downtown. But yeah, I mean, it's just a trade-off, right? If you choose to live in a house, and obviously it's going to be possibly more in a suburban area, you trade one for the other, right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's what we're like, well, what's most important? Is it walking downtown and going to restaurants, or is it having space to expand the business? Sometimes you can find, kind of a compromise between the two. Right. So that's what we're hoping.
Yeah.
So we're hoping.
All right. Fingers crossed for that. Okay. So my next question, I'm going to ask it kind of twofold. For those who are listening, possibly in the future, many years from now, we are in the middle of quarantine, lockdown, shelter in place, all of those terms that I can think of, due to COVID-19. So my question that I was going to ask you is, what challenges do you face in your business? And I guess maybe if you want, you can answer it how you want, but I'll offer a couple different ways that you can. And that is, maybe prior to everything that's going on, what would your answer have been? And then maybe how would you answer it now, given shelter in place, being unable to go out and source new inventory, or other challenges that would come along with our current circumstances?
I know. So I'm trying to think of this from the perspective of, so the challenges that we had prior to quarantine and versus.
If I were to maybe ask you this question in January, what challenges would you have said that you guys face in your business?
I think just probably storage space.
Yep. Space was definitely for us, that was a challenge. And then also I'm going to say slow sales. That was something that we were seeing after October of last year. We definitely saw a dip. So that was something that in January we were already experiencing. Right. So that really hasn't changed. In fact, we've seen mostly consistency from the beginning of the year, even though we have been in this, circumstance. So at the beginning of the year, I would say, yes, it would have been, lack of sales, that type of thing.
And then, what about now? How would you answer that? I mean, the obvious is not being able to go out and source. Did you guys have a death pile already of items?
I mean, we have some, but Bill's, I think you've just been...
I've just been
tempering how much you
I'm list. Like 3 to 5 a day, just so I can kind of spread it out and not run out. Because once I run out, then I'm jumping back into my personal closet.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and what I'll say too about that, Denali, is that initially what comes to mind is that I can't go sourcing.
Right.
But honestly, as I'm thinking about it, it's right now the challenge is not being burnt out and not giving up. If I'm being totally honest, because the sourcing piece was my recharge. It was my chance to be like, okay, I'm excited. I'm in it again. I'm, getting items that we can sell. And now that I don't have that piece, it's like, okay, well, how do I continue to stay excited about it?
Right.
Which, I think that happens to a lot of us, is that burnout piece. So that's my honest answer about that right now.
No, that's a great answer. And I totally can relate to that, because we all have our own parts of this job that excite us. And I think for probably 90% of us, sourcing is the most exciting part. And absolutely. So, not having that to kind of boost you, I think has been difficult for a lot of people. I can speak for myself and say, I've definitely felt... I felt that challenge for myself. So Okay. All right. Well, where do you guys see the future of your reselling business going? I mean, again, this is kind of a murky question, because, it's hard to foresee what's going to be happening a month from now. But again, maybe thinking back to the beginning of the year, you know, how would you guys have answered this question? Like, where would you have wanted your business to go in 2020? And maybe that answer is still the same.
Well, I mean, the good news is it is still the same. So one of the things that Bill and I focus on in the reselling business is giving back. And so our goal this year has been to give back to our reselling income. So that hasn't changed. So that's great news. We want to see that increase, and we want to make sure that we can give back as much as possible. But that became part of our business plan this year, was how can we give back to the community by doing something that we love in general.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I know that you guys are doing a giveaway right now or something charity based. Can you elaborate on that?
Absolutely. So, you know, going back to our philanthropy roots, we've been racking our brain, like, how are we going to give back to the reselling community during this time? And we were able to do some kind of crowdsourcing with some of our PFFs, and we've raised over $1,000. And we created, it's not a giveaway. It's a fund. Mm-hmm. That we are just giving grants to people in need, and we're having fellow resellers nominate them. They can nominate themselves too, but we're just going to reach out and make sure that it's okay that they receive a monetary, grant essentially. And then the only requirement is that they have to give half away to another reseller. So we just wanted to make sure that it was impactful, not just for one person, but that way they can impact someone else as well and maybe inspire someone else.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And we want this to kind of not peter out, as it were. We want to try to get this thing just continually going.
Yeah.
That's great. Exactly. So if it's something that's continually going, like, where can people go to nominate somebody?
So we have, there's a few of us that are part of the initial fund. We're like the founding sponsors. I won't give their names, but you can find their information on my Instagram. Okay. So we actually have the link directly in Instagram. So in my bio at Girly Girl Style, and in Bill's bio at 324 Fine, mm-hmm. if someone just clicks on the link, it takes you right to the nomination form. And it's quick. It really is just like, who are you nominating? Why can we contact you? End of story.
Yeah, so
it does not take any time at all.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's really exciting. And I'm sure that's going to benefit a lot of people. And I love that they get to give half of it to somebody else, because that feels nice as well. They get to feel
exactly.
They get to pass on that good karma.
Hey there, thanks for tuning into the Flip the Script podcast. I wanted to take a quick moment to express my gratitude for your continued support. As a listener, you play a crucial role in the success of this podcast, and there are so many ways you can help out, and I'd love to share a few with you. For starters, you can support the podcast with a monthly donation as low as 99 cents at flipthescriptpodcast.com. Every little bit counts. And if you want to show your love even more, don't forget to subscribe and leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcasting platform. I read every review and really appreciate those who've left reviews already. And last but not least, be sure to check out the affiliate links in the show notes. There is a small kickback that is received from any purchases that you might make. And of course, follow flipthescript.pod on Instagram. It's also a great way to stay up to date on the latest episodes and behind the scenes content. Thank you again for being a part of the Flip the Script community. I couldn't do it without you.
All right. Yeah. Well, you know, in thinking back to when you guys first started out your reselling business, I'm curious what advice you would give yourself when you were first starting out.
There's so many things that always come to mind, but, I know. I'm like, there's so many things.
Tell me them all. I'm game.
For me, you know, just making sure that I didn't focus on the extra pieces that didn't really help the business. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, I feel like sharing does help. I feel like for me, that's important. The community is important. I'm talking more along the lines of extra things, like making little, notes for your closet that say no trades, mm-hmm. all that stuff. I mean, some time creating that,
right?
Getting host picks and then changing the title to say host pick. Mm-hmm. So that was,
I never did that.
Yes, well, because you learned from me not to do that. That was kind of a waste of time. Also, hosting a Posh party, and I'm saying this out of love, no offense to Posh at all, because I love them. They are my platform. But I, you know, I've hosted a few virtual Posh parties, and not the Posh and Sips, not the, you know, where you have the community there, but selling or sharing other people's items. You know, I feel like for me, that time I would have liked to have spent somewhere else. So, and I think it's great. And I love that people do it. And especially if you're new, it can be a way for you to really connect with others. But at this point, you know, I'll still host the Posh and Coffee. I'll still do that. But just
the emoji spam's a bit much.
Yeah. I mean, that's
I know. I always wonder with the emoji spam. I'm like, do they have these, like, do the people who do the emoji spam, do they have them, like, copy, you know, like, in their notes somewhere on their phone? Or I hope they do. And if they don't, I so appreciate them thinking up every emoji every single time.
It would take me like 20 minutes just to send one thing.
Oh my god! And that would go back to, again, where can your time be spent that can help in whatever way? Yes.
What about you,
Bill? Help you. So,
Whew, I learned everything from Tori, so I don't think there's anything I would have done any different, actually, because I went through the ups and downs with her before I even thought about this. Because I would drive her to the thrift stores and just be like, can we go now? She's like, oh, I have to edit now. It's like another 90 minutes. I'm like, oh,
that's why you don't go to the regular thrift with me. That's why you don't go to the regular thrift.
I do not enjoy the regular thrift.
So I would say for you, and I mean, I hate to talk for you.
Really?
But I think that you going to the bins by yourself sooner is something that you probably would have changed, because at the beginning you were very reluctant to even go shopping.
I was very reluctant to go to the first Posh and Sip in Everett to go to the bins.
I would say, just knowing you.
Because I was the only guy there. I was like, oh, this is great. Yes.
I think that that is probably the
best. I want to touch on this real quick also, because we briefly mentioned that you guys have a YouTube channel. So anybody who's not subscribed should absolutely go check that out. You guys do provide lots of information on your channel. One of my favorite things is that you guys go live at 4:05 on Sundays. Most Sundays. I love saying live at 4:05. But can you tell us, I guess, can you tell everyone, you know, what sort of content are you putting out on your channel? And, you know, where do you see the direction of the channel going this year, if you have any different thoughts for 2020?
Yeah, and, you know, with everything happening, it does change things a little. My channel was started as a reseller channel to give, essentially, my channel was started because I couldn't find the information I was looking for on numbers. So I was like, I want to know what people are making. I want to know how they're running their business. So that's how I started the channel. And I'm still sharing that information. So as we go throughout the year, I'm still able to provide, you know, an insight into how our business is doing during this time. And I think that's valuable as well. People want to know, you know, okay, what are you doing right now to help the business? How are you handling it? We have changed things a little. We are doing a little bit more in the live realm because I love the lives. Ever since Bill joined, because that was something that was totally new to Bill being part of it. And ever since he joined our live at 4:05, it's a fun way to, you know, interact with the community, answer questions. We've had some guests on. So I think that as we go forward, I want to do more of the guest spots.
I think that almost has to happen.
Last night I hosted a vintage seller's little chat, and that was super fun. And I'm so sorry it was during the same time.
I know. Well, yours. I felt bad because I couldn't jump into that one. You know, there's the overlap, but it looked like a lot of fun. I'm going to watch the replay today, so.
Yes. Awesome. But that, I think that's kind of where, just taking it forward, still continuing to focus on the business and the numbers and
positivity as well, I think.
Yeah. I mean, that's always been a big piece, just being a positive place to let people go
definitely.
And talk.
Yeah, definitely. And do you have any advice for people who are thinking about starting a channel, but they're hesitant to?
Yes.
Start it.
Do it. And I know that seems like the most cliched answer, just start it, but It really is. I took forever to start my channel because I'm a perfectionist and I wrote a script. I mean, I do that for my job anyway, but you know, I made a script. I made sure I was wearing the perfect outfit. So I was scared. Like, but I was so, so nervous. Oh. And then after it was over, I'm like, I waited. I could have just done it. So it's kind of like, you just have to start somewhere. Don't overthink it. And just be yourself.
Perfection should not be a goal. It's no. not going to happen. So just go with it. If exactly. it feels comfortable, it's going to be comfortable.
Well, I mean, the genuineness, because right. the whole thing about YouTube is there's enough space. There are so many people on this planet that if, you know, even a quarter of the people had a YouTube channel, we would all still be able to find people we connect with, our people, our tribe. So for me, it's just like, just be genuine, be yourself, and you will attract the right people. And just do it for the right reasons. If there's some people I know that are doing it, you know, because they think it's going to make them money.
Oh yeah. I'm going to be like, a millionaire in a couple of months.
Right. Don't get me wrong. I would love to be full-time on YouTube. Don't get me wrong, but I'm also realistic that I just have to constantly just be.
Yeah. I think you have to, you have to want to get into it for the right reasons, because I mean, like you said, sure, it would be nice to be making like full-time income on YouTube, but that's not very easy, or you know, it's not predictable income for the most part, you know. A lot of people, I think,
exactly
the idea that we're making lots of thousands of dollars every month, where we're lucky if it's like hundreds. Yeah. So you have to it's a lot of work.
Well, it's a lot of work,
and I think that's I think probably so similar to you guys, you know, I just wanted to be able to connect with new people and to be able to share information. You know, I come from an HR background, and so I like teaching, you know, whether I'm good at it or not, it's something that I enjoy to do. And I think you guys would probably relate in the same way, just wanting to share information with people. And so I think it's just where, you know, what your intentions are with it and what you'll get out of it. And the monetary part just has to be the icing on your cake. Yeah.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yep. Agreed. And we love, and Denali, you seriously. So I remember just popping on your live thrift hauls when I was at work, just in the background. And it's like, you're just so genuine as well. And I think that that's a big piece of why we connected with you.
Yes.
It's just like being yourself is just so important.
Talking in the middle of the soda bins for like 45 minutes.
Genuine, guys, you know?
Just hanging out.
Well, and that's what's been so great. Exactly. It's just in general, finding your own community of people. Locally is ideal, you know, because I think it's really important to have some local reseller friends, but also finding your tribe online, because there are lots of people. I know a lot of times people see you guys or me, and they, you know, they think that we're the only people who can be their reseller best friends. But the truth is that there's actually lots of people, you know, there's people probably within 5 miles of them who probably do the exact same job. And so I think probably all of us would encourage people to seek those out. And Poshmark's a great app for finding people in the community.
Exactly. Yes, I mean, that's the thing about Posh. They may be lacking in a couple of areas, maybe a few, but it's the community. It's really, it brings people together. And
absolutely. I agree.
And I think that
well,
that
on that note, I'm so happy that Poshmark has brought the three of us together. I hope that, you know, once we are at a shelter in place, I can come visit you guys, or you guys come back over to the west side and see me. I know we all need a bins trip, you know.
Yes.
I mean, we might be in full hazmat suits now, but
big one.
It'll be a new style. So
that's okay.
Well, thank you guys so much for recording with me today. I so appreciate it. I enjoyed getting just to hear a little bit, some new nuggets that I didn't know, and then getting to share all of this with everyone who's listening. Yes, thanks, guys. All right, I'll talk with you soon, okay?
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you to Bill and Tori for being on this week's episode of the podcast. I so enjoyed getting to speak with you more about your reselling business and the philanthropy projects that you guys have recently created. If you'd like to follow Bill and Tori on social media, you can find them under the usernames 324fines and Girly Girl Style. That is their username on all of the platforms that they use. Again, all of that info will be in the show notes. I hope you all are having a wonderful week. Hopefully you had a wonderful weekend. Really hope that your stimulus checks have shown up. If they haven't yet, you're in good company. Mine has not shown up yet either. Until we speak again, keep on listing and keep on selling.